Welcome to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. Whether your family has been on this journey for years or you're just getting started, we're here to support and encourage you along the way. And now your hosts, Lynette Ezell and Tara Melber.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. Lynette and I are so excited to welcome today Jason Johnson. Jason and his wife, Emily, live in Texas with their four daughters, and Jason's the director of the National Church Ministry Initiative for the Christian Alliance for Orphans. He's authored several books on this topic, and his latest are Reframing Foster Care, Filtering Your Foster Parenting Journey Through the Lens of the Gospel, and also another book for church leadership called Everyone Can Do Something. Lynette, you and I have both been at conferences that he's done, and we were always so excited to listen to the content that he brought, so we're really excited.
Yeah, we are. Just the volumes that we've learned, how God's used him. So welcome, Jason. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Now, I know you travel extensively raising awareness about foster care and adoption, and we've all appreciated that.
We
appreciate Emily letting you be away from home like that. And the books you've written, your blogs continue to encourage so many of us who are on this this journey with you all. But I also know, I think you started ministry as a church planner. So how did God bring you from church planner to full-time foster care advocate?
Yeah, two things that if you had asked me 20 years ago to write the script of what I thought my story would be, those two things I don't think would have been in the story. However, of course, I'm grateful they are. And so the very short version of our journey is that I grew up in a ministry home in Dallas. My dad's been a pastor my whole life. And in college, I very quickly got involved in ministry. And so that's all I've ever done. I worked at a great church in North Houston all through college with a guy who eventually moved on to Austin and planted a great church called Austin Stone Community Church. And that's where, just through his mentorship and being working side by side with him, this idea of church planting even became something for me. And that was even years ago when it wasn't nearly as even prolific as it is now. The church planting conversation has grown extensively. And so it was so new for me, but I got to watch him. And then Emily and I got married after we graduated and continued to do ministry in Houston. And then several years later, he and I struck up a conversation again about doing ministry together. And that led to him suggesting that I consider church planting back in North Houston. And I had been doing student ministry, some young adult ministry, some curriculum development, writing, content creation. And but church planting was never on my radar. That was always for some other crazy guy, the entrepreneur, the risk taker, which I never felt like was me. But when he said that, I knew that was the right answer. I knew that was the next step that God was calling us to. And so we eventually planted in North Houston, and that was around 2009. And that's where our foster care journey began. Actually, a couple of years into our church plants, we recognized that there was a significant heart in our young church already for foster care and adoption. And it had been a conversation for my wife and I for some time, as it is with many people, kind of the private consideration of, you know, maybe one day we'll adopt, maybe one day when our kids are the right age,
right,
and finances are right, and this church plant doesn't feel like a church plant anymore, and you know, whatever the case may be, whatever those metrics are we put out there. And so we had the opportunity through our partnership with this church in Austin that helped plant us to take a bunch of people from our church to an adoption conference there in Austin. And we took a lot of people from our church. We were actually surprised. And my wife and I went as well. We strolled into a breakout session on foster care. And no lie, I tell you the truth. We sat in there for an hour and we walked out and we knew everything is about to change.
Wow.
For our family, for our church. If what we just heard about foster care in our city is true, everything's about to change. Mm. And so we began our licensing. We became foster parents. And effectively, our church got a new pastor in a lot of ways. Because as so many know, when you step into this journey, you see things you can never unsee, and you're exposed to things that you can't pretend like don't exist anymore. And mm-hmm. and if we really want it to be, and here's where it came down for us as a church, if we really want it to be a church that impacted the city, we simply cannot ignore this issue.
That's
we
right.
cannot. It just became such a huge part of the culture of our church. And that led to me getting to work with other churches in Houston and outside of Houston, not only through our church planting network, but just helping them think through what this is going to look like in their church. How are they going to engage in this? And that developed in me this passion for helping other churches. And our church continued to grow and our staff continued to grow. And we just had experts leading in different areas in our church. And it really freed me up to pursue some of these other things outside of our church. And it ultimately just led me to feeling like the Lord was leading me on from our church to work with other churches. and so we began that transition process in our church plants about 5-6 years in. That's what I've been doing since. And so I spent a little bit of time with an organization in Houston, and then that led me to getting to work more nationally with Christian Alliance for Orphans.
You know, Jason, when you said we knew then that nothing would ever be the same again, I think we've all had spiritual markers in our journeys that we remember the day that the Lord mm-hmm. laid on our hearts that things would be different. And it reminds me, there's a song Sarah Grove sing. It's called I Saw What I Saw. And at the very beginning, she says, I saw what I saw and I can't forget it. I heard what I heard and I can't go back. I know what I know mm-hmm. and I can't deny it. Something on the road cut me to the soul. It's an incredible song about, in her ministry, something that she saw that exposed her to that call of the Lord, that things are going to change in direction. And it really wasn't long after that. I mean, really, in that season, you share that you received your first foster placement on a Wednesday night in 2012.
Yeah.
And so That's what right. are some of the most important memories that you have from that season?
Yeah. Our church plant was young, and we had 3 young girls at the time, 6, 4, and 2. And it was during that season that my wife especially felt like it was the right time for us to foster. And one memory in particular I have, and I think a lot of people, as I travel around the country and interact with a lot of people, not to overly generalize, but a lot of husbands mm-hmm. can relate to this. However, as well, there are the situations where it's maybe reversed. But what I discovered during that initial season was my wife was a little further ahead of me than this. And I had a list of reasons why it probably wasn't the right time, including the age of our kids, the age of our church plant, which was like the biggest baby of all of them, right? Like our 6, 4, and 2-year-old, they were easy compared to our church plant, as church planters can relate to. And so we had cordial conversations, never any animosity, never any argument, but just kind of having the conversation of when's the right time. She came down one night and said, hey, I need you to know there's never going to be a right time for us to do this.
That's right.
So true.
There's always going to be a time for us to not, a reason for us to not. There's kids out there that need us now, and it's just time for us to do it. And she walked upstairs, and about 15 minutes later, I followed her upstairs, and I told her, you're right. You're right. It's just time for us to do it. And so one thing in particular that stands out to me during that season was I've grown up in a tradition, as many of us have, that teaches that husbands are to be the leaders of their household and to be the spiritual leaders. And frankly, if we're all honest, like we don't really know what that means. Like we're just making stuff up as we go, you know, and we're doing the best we can. But what I learned in that moment is that sometimes for me, the best way for me to lead my wife is to follow what God has put on her heart. To say, I trust you and I trust God in you. And so let's take the next step forward. And so then we did, and we went to an orientation class. And the main thing I was using as why it was the wrong time was the age of my daughters, which were at the time of around 6, 4, and 2, maybe 5, 3, and 1. And Right out of the gate, the orientation leader starts to share a story about a little girl, a case that came across her desk that week, and just the tragedy that this little girl has experienced. And I sat there in my seat listening, thinking, this is infuriating that someone would do this to a little girl. Mm-hmm. And why isn't anyone there to protect this little girl? And if this little girl was my daughter, I would give my life to protect her. And it was as if God in that moment said, huh, interesting, Jason, you're using the age of your girls as an excuse as to why you shouldn't do this. And yet here you are getting angry about mm-hmm. the fact that there's nobody there to protect a little girl. Mm-hmm. And that was enough for me. It all made sense to me then, that my need to protect my family is a good God-given thing that he's given me. But it's something that he's given me not just for my family, but to use for the good of others as well. And so that was striking for me. And then we started the process, and we had our first placement come. And shortly after, we met biological mom for the first time. And mm-hmm. that was a shock, because no one had ever really prepared us for the dichotomy of emotions that you'll feel through this journey. And so we spend a lot of time now with families and with church leaders, helping them kind of put in these processes early on that helps people establish realistic expectations and right postures going in, that our posture is not to swoop in with a cape on our shoulders and rescue kids from big bad people. No, not at all. It's very much, we're all in this together, and there are broken humans and biological families that in many cases have experienced generational cycles of yes. brokenness. And we are stepping into that story not to rescue, not necessarily to fix, but to begin to walk alongside of them and say, hey, look, we're all in this thing together, and let's figure this thing out together. And that was a big shock for us. And it ultimately, I think, led us to where we are today, which we can probably talk about here in a moment.
Well, I love in reframing foster care when, because I had some of the same feelings, absolutely. I remember, you know, going to a jail cell, you know, but you wrote that one part of my heart longed to hate her and another part of me wanted to hug her. Mm-hmm. That's super, super transparent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just to be honest, in that moment, the first time I had enough time between that first placement coming and then us meeting her biological mother, there was enough time in there to allow my heart to kind of villainize her and demonize her.
Yeah.
And went to hate her. And then we sat across the table from her for the first time, and through tears, she shared her story with us. And I realized in that moment, this is not an evil villain. This is a broken human, just like me.
Right.
And that literally changed the trajectory of our posture and our perspective moving forward. In surprising and beautiful, but also incredibly difficult ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you have said before as well that foster care is as much about pulling a child out of a broken story as it is being pulled into one.
Oh, yeah.
And that changes us when we look across and see the person for who they are, the birth parent for who they are, and the generational sin that has brought them, the cycles that have brought them all into this place that nobody wants to be. But you said at one point that she felt like somehow and in some way she wasn't just the birth mom. She wasn't a villain. She was another human. But she was actually somehow and in some way my responsibility. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So that she's not the enemy. She's somehow our responsibility. And that can take on a number of different forms. Mm-hmm. And every case is different.
Sure.
And so some cases are going to have a lot of opportunity to interact with biological parents, and some cases are simply not. And so what I'm very careful about is making broad sweeping generalizations about foster care, because what I've discovered is, for the most part, the only accurate, broad, sweeping generalization that you can make about this is that it is equal parts beauty and brokenness.
Right.
And then everything else is difference, case by case. And so what I want to be careful of is not suggesting to people that if you're not having a meal every week with bio parents and spending time with them at the park and inviting them to your home for things, then you're doing it wrong, right? That's not what I'm suggesting at all. Every case is different, but it could take on very small yet significant forms. And what I mean by that is maybe it's just getting your heart to the point where you're no longer villainizing them, but you're praying for them. And taking on that personal responsibility to pray for them, to pray for their healing, to pray for their restoration. And maybe it just starts there.
Right.
That we assume we own that responsibility to pray for them, and to love them, and to make sure that the posture of our heart is pure and right towards them. And then in other cases, it can take on other forms as well. It can involve spending time with them and developing relationship with them. But in some form or fashion, shifting our heart away from the feeling sometimes that maybe I'm working against them, to finding a place in your heart where it says, no, I'm working with them.
Right.
And I'm for them. I can be against what they've done maybe, but I can still be for them. And that's where we need our hearts. That's where we need to be.
Yeah, I've heard you say before that we can, I just love this, we can be against their actions, mm-hmm. but still be for their souls, which that's the that's why we do that. It's the foundation of the gospel, right? I love how you define the gospel as God's capacity to bring great beauty out of tragic brokenness, because that's what he's done for me.
Right.
So I love, just kind of explain why it's so imperative to frame foster care upon the foundation of the gospel.
Yeah. So we've already kind of touched on the idea of it's just as much about pulling a child out of brokenness as it is about being pulled into it. Mm-hmm. And this is where we really begin to see in very tangible and rich ways the idea of the incarnation, frankly. And we're in January now. I know that someone might be listening to this at a different time of the year, but it's true all of the time. And just a few weeks ago, we celebrated Christmas. And ultimately, what we celebrate at Christmas is this idea that God would step out of his glory and he would wrap himself up in the brokenness of our humanity, that he would essentially say to us, I see you where you are, in your mess, in your brokenness, and I'm coming after you. Mm-hmm. I'm engaging in your story. Not, I see you where you are, and it is not looking good from here. And so you need to get your act together, and then maybe one day you can be with me. That's not what we celebrate. What we celebrate is this incarnation, that he wrapped himself up in our brokenness. He carried our brokenness to the cross. He was broken by our brokenness so that we don't have to be broken anymore. And that's the beauty of the gospel that we celebrate. And it's also the beauty of the gospel that we demonstrate, that we too would look at hard places and broken people around us. And rather than step back and isolate and kind of build taller walls and insulate ourselves from hard and difficult things, that we would actually become people who say, I see you where you are and I'm coming after you. And if we're all just honest, that completely flips the script on everything that we are kind of inoculated to live by, all the mm-hmm. expectations. And very generally speaking, the idea of life is be as comfortable as you can and mm-hmm. make it as convenient as possible and avoid anything that is remotely difficult or hard. And then the gospel steps in and says, what if we actually flipped the script on all of that? What if we became the kind of people that didn't step back, but we stepped towards, because that's what Jesus has done for us? And then the applications of that, frankly, take on all kinds of different forms. And obviously a very beautiful and practical one is that we would step into the lives of struggling families and kids. But it's also so much more than that, that it's more about the kinds of people that we're becoming. Mm-hmm. We are becoming the kinds of people who step towards hard places, broken people. And it's less about what we do. It's more about our identity. This is just who we are. And when we understand who we are and we come across situations that require us to be who we are, then we respond accordingly. And that's why I say, you know, and we sat in that hour long workshop on foster care, having planted a church that was saying, this is who we want to be. Mm-hmm. We want to be the kind of church that steps into areas in our city that are hard and broken. And now we're being confronted with that. And okay, this is an opportunity for us to act on who we are, our identity. And so that's what we want to be. And you know, when we engage in that posture, it begins to shift the way that we step into hard places and into the lives of broken people, and particularly in foster care. What the gospel requires of us and how it reframes our posture going in is that foster care is less about getting a child for our family, and mm-hmm. it's more about giving our family for a child mm-hmm. and embracing whatever implications come on us as a result of that. Because the gospel is about us giving ourselves, laying our lives down. And why is that important? Well, it's important because if we go into foster care with a posture of what can we get out of this, mm-hmm. namely, we want to get a kid for our family or whatever it might be, we're going to be sorely disappointed.
That's
because
so
true. What happens when we're not getting what we want, when things are difficult and things are hard and things are messy, because it is. And then maybe even more importantly, if our posture going in is we just want to get a child for our family, then it effectively cuts off all opportunity for us to be for the redemption of biological families. Mm-hmm. Because our posture is, frankly, we just want to get your kid from you for us and then move on. And a gospel posture going into this effectively requires that we say, you know what, our heart is to give our family for this child and embrace the implications that come along with that, including being for the redemption of biological families and embracing the likelihood that we might have to grieve the loss of having to say goodbye to a child that we have become very attached to, because that's a very likely thing. And it's actually probably the number one thing that keeps a lot of good people away from a lot of great kids, because they're afraid of that potential grief. So I'll stop, because we could talk for hours on the gospel in this. Obviously it's a big deal. And yeah.
In that, it requires us, when we think about the gospel and the implications, it requires us to really search our hearts to know why mm-hmm. we got into this in the first place. So all of those things that you were just talking about. But, you know, typically things turn out the way that we think they're going to. So even if you go into foster care because you want to parent other children, or in your mind you think, I want to make a difference in the life of a wounded and vulnerable child that's experienced a lot of trauma, that the implications of even the child joining your family for years to come are, it doesn't end the day that parental rights might be terminated. It is an ongoing journey
right.
forever. And so we have to really search our hearts for what is the reason. Are we willing to be like Jesus and put on flesh and run into the brokenness? Because that's a shocker to the world.
Yes.
That makes us the light in the darkness and the city on a hill. That is what people look and say, what in the world? Why would you do something like that? And that's when we point people to the glory of God and for his purposes. Right. So we have to really search our hearts as to why we're doing it, recognize it's a forever journey, and that we are, you wrote in the book that the gospel compels us to get into foster care. It sustains us in the midst of it, and it manifests itself through the gospel. And that's a perfect picture of it, because it's not an event that occurs and then it's done. It's
right.
forever. You are forever into brokenness.
Absolutely. Yes. Jason, thanks so much for being with us today and just beginning to scratch the surface of how the Lord leads us into foster care and how He equips the body to each do our part, that everyone can do something. So we thank you for your time today. And we know you have so much more to share with us just from your life experiences and the things that the Lord has taught you about this foster care journey. So we would like to invite you to join us again next time so that we can continue this conversation about foster care and adoption.
You have been listening to the Adopting and Fostering Home, a resource of the North American Mission Board. For more information about today's podcast and other relevant resources, visit sendrelief.org.